We're joined on the line by Sean Duke, the cool scientist. Hi, Sean.
Morning, Declan. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for joining us. And this is a great story to start off with. I don't know how, typical it is to either of us. But anyway, it is cheating men's faces. Give it away, says the scientist. Now, this is not anybody else, but scientists have been studying cheating men.
That's right. What they've found is there's a body of research, interestingly, on this, and they found that men with more masculine faces are more likely to be unfaithful. It doesn't mean that they're definitely going to be unfaithful, but they're more likely to be unfaithful. And this is very interesting because if you talk to women say that they can spot somebody who's potentially unfaithful just by looking at them, which sounds, maybe implausible in a way. But they put this to the test anyway. And when you talk about masculine features, you're talking about a strong ridge, brow ridge, a strong jaw, thinner lips. What they did was they got both men and women to look at pictures of a large number of men with different characteristics, both the masculine and less masculine characteristics. And then they got the men to anonymously report whether they actually were cheating or not. And they found that actually women in particular, but also other men, were very good at matching the unfaithful men that they thought were unfaithful that actually were unfaithful just by looking at pictures. So that's a very interesting finding. And the question is, why would women, for example, be so good at spotting cheating men just by looking at them? And the evolutionary story behind this is that, of course, we're in the modern world now, but we came from, if you like, the hunter-gatherer society. And way back then in prehistory, it was very important for a woman to know whether a man was going to cheat, because if he was like that, she could select a partner and then she'd end up on her own trying to bring up the child without any protection, without any male there. So it was important for her, very important for her, for her child or her DNA to survive, like Charles Darwin says is the all-important thing, that she would pick a man that would stick around. And then from the male point of view, what was important in pure evolutionary terms, taking all the morality out of it, if you like, that, again, like Darwin says, to make your DNA survive to the next generation, which is what it's all about, that the man would have a good idea that if he could spot a man that was a cheater, that, who was around a woman, for example, he would not end up in a situation where he was bringing up some other man's child and wasting time and resources with that, because then obviously that wouldn't enable him and his DNA to get to the next stage, next generation.
So, that's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, it's all to do with how we were programmed from evolution at the early beginnings, without the morality, as Sean says. Sean, there's lots of controversy at the moment about red meat and processed meat and things, but a study by Oxford University and funded by Cancer Research, what have they found?
That's right. So Oxford University, we all know that they're very reputable, Cancer Research UK too. And what they found, actually, that even small amounts of red and processed meat, so you're talking about like a rasher a day, can increase the risk of bowel cancer. And this emerged from this UK biobank thing, which I've mentioned a few times, which is this huge store of genetic information in the UK on about 500,000 people. So they dip into that and they find all kinds of things. And they found that one rasher a day is going to increase your risk. But then eating more than one, if you go up to three, that can increase your risk of bowel cancer by 20%. Now, if we just look at the statistics quickly, so that means essentially that for every 10,000 people they looked at in the study who ate a rasher a day, about 40 of them will develop bowel cancer. So that's about 4 people in every 1,000 that are eating a rasher a day. If you eat 3 rashers a day, it's slightly more risky, but not enormously more risky. But the general message here is to cut down on red and processed meat, which we probably knew. Also, smoking the meat, that is, curing or adding salt, that increases the risk. So, say, smoked rashers, that increases the risk. Or, sadly, because I love a barbecue and lots of us do, high-temperature cooking, that adds to the risk because it produces some carcinogenic chemicals, cancer-causing chemicals. And this whole area of colorectal cancer is a big area, of course. We all know people who've suffered. There's about 1,000 men and 800 women, approximately, I'm speaking, every year who get it. So, the message is not give it up completely, but certainly watch it and cut it down maybe on a daily basis.
Okay. You were telling us before about space travel and NASA, and here they had a study of twins. You mentioned this, I think, last week. Well, what's the story there?
Yeah, just following up on last week, we're talking about the difference between aging on Earth a la Einstein and, you know, traveling and this idea he had. But this is an experiment, if you like, in practice in real life. And they're twin astronauts in America, Scott Kelly and his brother Mark. And one of them, Scott, age 51, he went off into space for a year, went on to the International Space Station, and Mark stayed on Earth. Now, what the scientists thought, they measured the blood of the twins during that time, and they expected that Scott would suffer because living in microgravity, essentially where there's very little gravity, where your bones break down, essentially, and become less strong, they thought there'd be all kinds of negative effects. But what they actually found was fascinating, because they found that telomeres, now these are the things that protect your DNA strands, so they're like, if you think of shoelaces, you know, the little plastic bits on the end of a shoelace that protect the end of a shoelace. So that's like a telomere. And as we age, these things wear down. And when they go completely, the DNA is exposed and we get cancer, diseases of aging, and we get heart disease and all of that. So the longer you have the telomeres, the better. And they found that when Scott, that's the chap who was in space, got back, his telomeres had got longer. Instead of, so he had spent a year in space. They should get shorter as we get older. His got longer compared to his twin. And they're thinking, well, gosh, is this a way, does this tell us something where we could actually use this knowledge to prevent diseases of aging, or else make us live longer without actually suffering from the diseases of aging, which are caused when our DNA is exposed to damage because these protective telomeres are gone.
So something positive.
One caveat.
In space. Oh, yes.
That the effect didn't last. Scott returned to normal when he returned to Earth.
Telomeres. Yeah. So you have to go up and live there. Listen, very quickly on one about these pigs I've been reading about anyway. They thought they were dead and then they were alive and now they're dead again. What's the story?
Yeah, it's a bit of a Frankenstein one. It's been all over the news that these decapitated pig heads, gosh, sounds horrific, doesn't it? But essentially, these pigs, their heads were decapitated, and then they tried, immediately afterwards, they were able to revive some signs of life, if you like, in some of the brain cells in the pigs. But it's not as traumatic, really, as it's been made out. It is interesting because by pumping oxygen, which we know we need, our brain needs, into the brain, they revived some of these cells that would otherwise have damaged. Now, that's a long way from bringing a brain back to life. But what it means in practice is that maybe by finding that we can, if pumping oxygen into the brain can keep the cells alive, that might help in a case where somebody has a stroke and they're going to get permanent brain damage, that maybe this is a way that we can stop that happening until we get the stroke under control.
Excellent.
So it's not going to, you know, bring back a dead brain, or certainly not anytime soon, but it might help in the treatment of stroke and preventing people getting brain damage in that time period.
Brilliant.
Where they're in and their brain is deprived of oxygen.
Okay, Sean Duke, the cool scientist. Well done, Sean. Thanks very much indeed for all the science stories of the week. And Sean's website is sciencespinning.com, and you can read him as well when he writes articles in the Irish Times.